Hello, I'm Eamon Clark, and this is Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about 2000 AD collected editions. Every episode, I'm joined by a different guest who chooses the book we discuss. And for this episode, my guest comes from a splendid website called Cult Faction, of which more later. It's Brett Summers. Brett, hello and welcome to the club.
Hi, Eamon. Yeah, thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
It's a delight. Thank you very much, sir. We'll be talking about your website later on. Now, of course, usually at this stage, I ask you your 2000 AD origin story before we get to your book pick. But in a way, the book you've picked is your origin story for 2000 AD. Is that right?
Yeah, it is really. I mean, I read all sorts of comics and books and everything like that. And for years, I've always tried to get into 2000 AD. And there are little bits that hook on. I mean, I've got memories of like the Judge Death stories and different things for a year where I've picked one up or whatever. And but I was always, it was like that one, there was the Ego as well with Doomlord and all that sort of stuff. And then there was, there used to be a Scream sort of horror comic as well years ago. I think it was called Scream. And just different things. And I think 2000 AD went to the bottom. And I've always tried, because everyone always tells me about it, I've tried and tried to sort of get back into it. I've actually, yeah, that's what led me to this, really, with finding out Alan Moore and his backstory and going in that way.
Okay, so tell us the book, first of all. Give us the sort of the title and tell us what we're talking about.
Okay, it's Alan Moore's Complete Future Shocks.
Splendid. The creator, obviously, mainly Alan Moore, artist, will be mentioning some of the various 2000 AD famous artists as we go along, but there's loads of them. If we started listing the creators, I think we'd be here all night. So we won't do the normal creator rundown. I will say that the most recent version has a cover image of the great Wizard of Northampton himself by Luke Preece, apparently. So it contains a collection of stories. The first one, I think, appeared Prog 189 all the way back in 1980. And it runs right up to Prog 332 in 1983. Tell me how you got to this particular book. How did you get to Alan Moore's Future Shocks as a collection? Is it because you'd known about Alan Moore from elsewhere first?
Yeah, it was legit. No, Alan Moore, obviously Watchmen. I was a big fan of that. And they did like From Hell, V for Vendetta, Promethea, Lost Girls and A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Or he did a bit on Supreme as well in the comic book. And it was just sort of finding out, oh, this is what he'd done, looking through like what else I could read about him. I suddenly saw this volume there of Future Shocks and suddenly discovered this is all the stuff he'd done before that. So it was even, that interested me even more really to see the sort of how he'd grown as a writer into the person that I sort of had, you know, this guy I've read about before, you know, read his work before, sorry. And it was like an interesting thing. It was almost like finding out, you know, Phil Collins used to be in Genesis, but in a much cooler way.
Yes, that's right. He used to be in a band before. Yes, you may have heard of them. Yeah, Paul McCartney used to be in a band before Wings. Yeah.
It was the best one in Wings.
So did you know anything about that whole idea of Future Shocks as stories themselves, the sort of like, you know, their place in 2000 AD history?
Yeah, I kind of remember them as being, when I used to flip, I remember they were sort of the shorter stories, and I remember liking them. I didn't remember they were called Future Shocks, but I remember they had like a one or two page stories in there, and I always kind of liked them because they were sort of one and done stories, whereas some of the other stuff, there was a lot of history and backstory. So you couldn't always kind of just drop in to say a Judge Dredd because you needed all the who everyone was and who the players were and what was going on in the story, you know, whereas they were kind of one and done stories. So I do remember them in that way. But obviously at that time, I didn't know who any of the people involved were or probably even cared at that point. I just watched some good stories.
Yes, because they've had that place in 2000 AD history. I mean, obviously, from the editor's point of view, I think having these short 2, 3, or 4, or 5 page stories that they could just fit in to fill gaps in the comic when they needed them was helpful.
No, definitely. And they're really good. I mean, like I say, a lot of it is sort of early 80s and stuff now, and maybe people reading it nowadays might not get all the references or the jokes because, you know, because of age, I guess, really. I'm an old man now. But a lot of the actual humour and the gags and that still run true today, and a lot of the points that are made in them are still very true, or probably even truer today.
Yes, there's some interesting stuff in these Alan Moore stories. Of course, the other great thing about Future Shocks, and still to a certain extent, is that it's sort of a way in for talent to find. You know, the first thing they'll get to do is to write Future Shocks before they get, you know, let loose on established characters or their own series. And I think, you know, I've got this 1986 softback Titan collection of some of the Alan Moore Future Shocks. You know, subsequent collections have done the complete thing. But I shared some of the images from the introduction with you. I sent you some pictures of them because Alan Moore wrote an introduction, which, of course, I don't think they could get him to do that sort of stuff anymore.
No, I'm fair play to him for trying to ask him.
And he does, yeah, that's right, yes. Yes, cue up at his Northampton home to say, please could you write an introduction for our latest collection. And he does talk in the introduction about that sort of nursery slopes aspect of Future Shock stories, and about how, you know, writers want to write their 10,000 word epics, which, of course, I think based on his recent output, that's what he's doing at the moment with his is it Jerusalem that's supposed to be coming out soon?
It's apparently coming out soon. Yes. But I think he keeps finding more bits to add to it.
Okay, extending the start date further and further back in time. But as he said, you know, it's for a budding writer writing short stories and having to deliver characters, a story, and then a conclusion in three or four or five pages was how he learned his craft to a certain extent. So at the time, in 86, he thought quite highly of these stories and of the introduction to 2000 AD that they provided for him.
Okay, that's interesting. So, I mean, there are, like, there was one, not that we're getting into stories yet, but there was one... the Second Chance one, which is literally about a page and a half, and it was basically Adam and Eve, where it ends up with a guy's called Adam and then she's called
is she called Doris or Mildred or something like that?
Mavis.
Yeah.
And the whole bit is to just build up to that gag.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's just like, and it is a simple sequential art story and how it's done, and then you just get the gag at the end. Yeah, there's no in-depth reading between the lines, there's no references as well, obviously Adam and Eve, but no, you know, you need to know anything to get more out of it. It's basically there on the page for you, and it's just really interesting seeing him do something like that, because like you say, the stuff he does nowadays is packed with data, references and everything else going you can think of.
Yes, I mean, you know, we have to remember that Alan Moore used to be quite a funny writer.
We forget how funny Alan Moore is.
Absolutely. And some of the stories, as you say, they are just, in a way, they're just like two-page gags. There's that story, The Wild Frontier, which has the lovely Dave Gibbons artwork. It's a Future Shock, and it begins with the Billy the Squid joke and ends, and ends with the Clone Ranger. So, yes, basically two gags delivered over two pages of comic strip. As you say, so we've got this complete collection, which is Future Shocks. It's also got Time Twisters, which were, you know, another sort of brand of short story for 2000 AD, but would obviously a time travel or a time theme. There's a couple of odd items which they've just added in. And then we get the complete Abelard Snaz stories. I don't know if you'd encountered him before at all, Brett.
No, I hadn't up until flicking through here.
The man with the two-story brain, yes, whose brilliant schemes always seem to go awry, basically. There's always some crucial fault in his otherwise brilliant schemes.
Yeah, I mean, the other ones I liked is just how he could take something that was familiar and just totally deconstruct it, like with the Rocket Red Glare story and stuff like that, the sort of Flash Gordon, where basically he just strips the character right down for a joke, really. And it was Like, I actually remember that one, reading that many years ago.
Right, okay. The Regrettable Ruse of Rocket Red Glare, yes.
And just how the, yeah, totally, you know, what would be like, you know, your normal Flash Gordon hero. And I imagine I couldn't find the year on my notes or what was that, 1981. So I'm guessing it may have even been a response to the film that may have come out at that point.
Yes, possibly. And of course, you know, to that other galactic hero, Dan Dare as well.
Were they rivals at that point? Was that in the Eagle at that point? Because I know it came over to 2000 AD at some...
Yeah, it started... Dan Dare started right in the beginning of 2000 AD, 1977, and then, of course, there was the New Eagle at some point during the 80s that took over the stories then. But yeah, Rocket Red Glare, as you say, a Flash Gordon-like hero, and he does that thing... imagining heroes who are perhaps slightly past their sell-by date. They've grown old with their legends. You sort of sometimes you can see sniffs of Watchmen in here, can't you?
And it does that as well with the Bad Timing story as well, which is basically like the Superman riff where they send their baby off to the other planet and then it turns out their planet doesn't die. And then... it gets to Earth in like the 1980s and starts off a nuclear war because they just see the spaceship coming in and everyone bombs each other. So it's
yes.
Yeah. So, you know, you can definitely see they were two that stood out for me. And then, like you say, you can see the seeds there of where he sort of treads later with your sort of Watchmen and like the stuff he did in Supreme and even the Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow and all that sort of stuff. And it's... and I feel like it's like almost like a historian thing, looking back at the work and how where it may the influences may have come from.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, one thing we have to say about Alan Moore is he does know his comics history inside out. He knows all the legends and the stories. Yeah, that story, Bad Timing, from Prog 291, with art by Mike White. Quite a lot of Mike White. I think he does the Rocket Red Glare story as well. So he appears quite a lot in this collection. Although, as I say, we've also got people like Dave Gibbons and others that we'll get to in a moment. So there's those stories. Yeah, Bad Timing and the Rocket Red Glare. What about the others that stood out to you?
One I really liked, and I'm sure I had this one because I looked up the cover because it rang a bell, and I'm sure I had this once upon a time in 1981, the Last Rumble of the Platinum Horde.
Yes, which had a famous cover by Mick McMahon on that issue.
I remember the cover.
Yeah.
And then when I read the story, I kind of remember this. And again, John Higgins is on that one, who pretty much stuck with Moore for quite a while. I know he did the colours on Watchmen for
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think he did a couple of albums. That's right. I think he did a couple of bits of them later on, but it's so this could have been the start of like obviously their relationship. But yeah, the Last Rumble Planet Horde, you basically got the Carbonian Empire, is that how you say it?
Yes.
Who like but basically they're very clearly in like an Imperial Japanese army who basically go on a rampage right the way across the galaxy and then realise after a while that they've actually gone back round and space isn't linear, it's circular, and they've gone back round, but they just decide that anything they can do and anything that they know how to do is just keep going. So they just keep going around and basically trashing themselves in the process and carrying on going. That kind of rings true a lot today in some aspects of society.
Yes, but, absolutely, yeah.
Sort of, you know, that was 1981. He's making a comment there about things going around in circles and people just treading back on what they've done before. And yeah, I think I wouldn't say he's a prophet, but he definitely knew what he was talking about then and how things have come back around now. So it's nice to see that some of like the stories have stayed relevant as well. Like you say, there are some that are a little bit kooky or a little bit weird now. Like the ones, I've forgotten the name of it now. The ones, sorry, with all the sketches, like the language translations and all that.
Oh, the phrase book.
Yeah.
The English Flondrucian phrase book about a disastrous holiday.
At the time it was written, it was very good. But it was, the Last Run of the Platinum Chord, it was just that kind of, it was very, very violent, but very, very funny. And I think that's kind of how Moore kind of carried on from there, really. And I think it was also like a nice indication as well of like 2000 AD as a whole. You know, there's a lot of, especially in the 80s, like a lot of comics were getting sort of stick from people for, you know, their violent impact and all that sort of thing, and on young minds and all that sort of thing. But also, it was actually really hilarious if they actually bothered to read it rather than just look at the pictures.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, it had some interesting things to say about imperialism and the pointlessness of endless sort of invasion and war and conflicts. The Platinum Horde, you just can't give up.
Yeah, we must keep going. That's all we know.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't know any alternatives, you know. Possibly the second time in recent months that this podcast has vaguely referenced the Chilcot Report. Still, there you go. So, but there's plenty of stuff in here. A bit later on, we've got The Wages of Sin, which is a terrific story with Brian Talbot Art about a character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the character who goes to supervillain school.
Yeah, no, that was brilliant. Yeah, the famous villains training school.
Yes, that's right, and becomes the infamous Anthrax school shadow, BA.
Yeah, BA at the end, just because he's graduated now. And again, this is sort of just typical Alan Moore again. He's gone through the whole deconstruction of the villain now and how they learn to get that way. I mean, was the bit I quote now underlined with it? Yeah, listen, you vermin, spits Mr. Dreadspawn to the prophetic right bro. To be a successful villain these days, you've got to look evil. How about some long tusks and a scarred face?
Yes.
And then he replies, couldn't I just have a slight limp and a nasty cough? You know, it's just that kind of, again, in so, even though they're villains and they're evil and bad, he can still pull all the humour out of that. And about, yeah, like this guy who at one point was, was an out of work repairman, wasn't he? He just needs a job. And then by the end of it, like you say, is, Anthrax school shadow? Yeah, BA.
Yes.
You know, and how he's, yeah, it's changed him with a, there's no more whimper anymore. And he's got that sort of big sort of metal claw thing and everything like that. And it's just how that's shown on the page and how he comes across. Yeah, no, it's just, again, it's almost a one joke setup, but at the same time, it's done brilliantly and also questions the whole super villain thing. And there's been hundreds of things like that since with films and, you know, how to be the villain and, you know, what makes a villain. There was like that Sky High one where they were, it was the superhero school, and then the kid was actually training really to be the villain. But
right, yes.
And things like that. And it's all, you know, it's been done and dusted all over the place now. But again, I think not many have done it that well.
Yeah, absolutely. Remember, the wages of sin are death, but the hours are good and the perks are fantastic.
Yeah. I had that one on my list, really. That was stuck like that and a good one. And then also I had Skirmish as well.
Right.
Which was, what did I write about? Oh, yeah, Dave Gibbons again. Because, again, Dave Gibbons, Watchmen in the future. And the whole thing is based on, which is one I think that might be lost nowadays, the whole gag is basically based on Space Invaders. The whole sketch, sorry, is basically on Space Invaders, where the aliens arrive into the Earth continuum, and there's like a strange dimension of space, and it's like they've got electronic pulse signals, and then they just get blasted away by a kid playing on Space Invaders.
Oh, yes, I remember, yes.
Simple, but again, it was just sort of effective. So you get all this build-up, wondering what's going on, and then they just get blasted anyway, and it's, again, it hinges on a classic arcade game, but so nowadays people might not even know that anymore. Hopefully Space Invaders is still out there somewhere. But because Wages of Sin, but it was still just the ridiculousness of it to build it up for that punchline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, any other ones that stood out for you?
Well, I like, there's a sort of progression through the Future Shocks. I like how he starts to introduce some more science fiction ideas. There's the I love the American Werewolf in Space with art by Paul Neary. I mean, it's a very sort of quick joke, but it's brilliantly done. And then towards the end of the Future Shocks, we get two stories, one called Eureka, which has this brilliant idea of about an alien race that may just be like an idea, like a concept. And then after that, he does a story called Dad about the guy in the spacesuit outside the space station trying to get back in.
Yeah.
And they're doing, I think, more sort of, they feel like classic sort of science fiction short stories.
Yeah, there's a lot of different sort of anthology sort of short story writers. It reminds me of, really. I mean, also it's got like a touch of that sort of Twilight Zone, Outer Limits sort of thing to it, where you get these stories with some sort of like twisty ending or some sort of shock ending, and that's it. And it's a one and done story, and it moves on. And you know, there's, well, even actually looking at that on the next notes, he actually did one called Twist Ending as well.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, they do have that sort of Twilight Zone. There's a slight twist at the end. Yes, I found the Space Invaders story skirmish, as you say, lovely Dave Gibbons artwork. There's some amazing stuff. The Return of the Thing, that's also Dave Gibbons, which is just a little joke about an alien. They're quite impressive stuff, really.
Yeah, that twist ending one where, like, yeah, where they think the writer is actually an alien, and that's where he gets all his ideas from. But then there's a twist. Wait, there is an alien. I won't give it away.
But it's not the writer.
Find out, yeah, but it's not the writer. And the alien is instructed to get going back to finishing the invasion of the death gerbils, which is something I'll probably read.
Yes. Sounds like, is that sounds very worthwhile of a commission. We should get the film, get the rights.
If Sharknado can do it, then that can do it.
Of course, when we get to twist endings, we come to the time twisters, which do that very well. And some of them have, you know, quite future shock, or sorry, quite Twilight Zone moments in them. I'm thinking about like the Ring Road story, which is quite amazing. That would you could see that in a Rod Serling Twilight Zone episode. Yeah.
No, definitely not that one. And like one that really stuck out to me, and I think that someone who wrote for Red Dwarf might have read that, The Reversible Man.
Yes. Now, there's one of the most famous of Alan Moore's short stories from 2000 AD, with art by Mike White. And it's just a remarkable story. As you say, Red Dwarf might have...
Yeah, backwards. And that was what it reminded me of, yeah.
Yes.
Nognol. 71 Salads.
Yeah.
And all that.
And it's just this amazing story of a life lived backwards. It's quite touching in places, actually, for a short story in a 2000 AD comic.
Yeah, because he almost does the opposite. And he starts off with the funny, and then as you keep reading it on, you get drawn into this man's life, and it almost starts making sense of it going backwards. And you're sort of, because you can guess what's going to happen a bit, and when the different things happen with like family and parents and wife and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it was like the bit where he finally breaks up with his girlfriend, who was his wife, as it goes backwards, and it's like, then I never saw her again, and he's just sort of looking sad. And no, there was a lot in there. And again, for someone like at this point, Alan Moore, who was kind of a bit more sort of violent in humor, it was showing a different side to him, and just like, yeah, the range that he could do, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as you say, there is that one panel by Mike White, obviously words by Alan Moore, where he never sees her again. And it's just, you know, for this short time twister concept, it's quite remarkable, really, how it sort of conveys this terrible loss, you know.
Yeah, it is. And you do feel that. I mean, you sort of, that's that sort of bit where, okay, like when you're reading something, you just stop for that second and sort of think, oh. And then you like take your breath, and then you carry on reading again. And he really got that. And I mean, that's the first time first time I remember reading that. And like, when was that? Would have been what, about 83, 84, I suppose.
Something like that, yes.
And you know, and you're thinking, especially in those times, and you know, we're at the point now where sort of everything's exploding in films, and Freddy Krueger's about to come out, and Terminators, and all that sort of stuff. And then you just get something like that, and it's just sort of, I guess maybe in a way, going against the grain, which is what he's good at, but at the same time, delivering a great story in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the other great time twister story that he wrote is Chronocops, with, again, you know, you've mentioned John Higgins, who would go to be one of the Watchmen team. And here he is, of course, with Dave Gibbons, and doing interesting things with time travel. And the various layers that are in the story, and also sort of the hidden details in the background panels, which would become such a thing in Watchmen.
Definitely. I mean, I've read that 3 times, and I still think I need to read it again. Because there's so many, obviously, you know, the ending is one thing, but like you say, there's so much more in there. And I think that could almost be like a sort of a footnotes episode on its own, if you wanted to go and analyse for a story, because like I said, there's so much in there, and even the names of the characters, even though they're the same, but with the days on the end or whatever, so they know where they are and things like that, you know, there's a lot in that. And it was a really good read, and I said, I still think I need to read it again to make sure I've got it all in my head.
Yeah, and it's 5 pages, and it's...
Yeah, it's only 5 pages, yeah. I think that was the closest you might have got to David Lynch in that one, because I was reading it, and like you say, there's so much in the background, and like the time, because I sort of went in thinking, right, I need to keep my head together on the time travel part of it and where everyone is, but then it goes, yeah. I'll let everyone read it who's listening. I don't want to give it away, because it is a good one, but think of all those sort of real messed up time travel stories and you're probably there.
Yeah, if you've never read Chronocops, do yourself a favour and go and get it. It's almost worth the price of admission to this collection alone. It's a very famous story. Another film reference, you almost feel like the scriptwriter for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure had read this story at some point.
I've read that somewhere before. Yeah, it was... What's it? Oh, it reminded me as well of... It was a rubbish film with Bruce Willis where he has to go back and kill himself.
Looper.
That's the one.
Yes.
That's the one. That was all right. They'd done well. I think it was the script that let them down. But yeah, it almost had elements of that in it as well, and the whole, like, the full circle of time and stuff like that. But yeah, if you're not even interested in Alan Moore or Future Shocks, just go and find that story somewhere, definitely.
Yes, it is an absolute stunner and one of the most famous short stories from 2000s. History, I guess, in a way, particularly, as we say, because of what the partnership of Moore and Gibbons with John Higgins would do just a couple of years later.
I wouldn't even think of it from that point when I was reading it. I was thinking it more, I was trying to understand the story.
Yes.
But like you say, yeah, the people involved in that and then what they've gone on to, yeah, no, that's definitely, that makes it even more of a signpost in sort of comic history, definitely.
What about the rest of the time twisters? Any more stories picked out there on your notes?
Oh, the Disturbed Digestions of Dr. Dibworry.
Yes.
A Future Shark. There's lots of mise-en-scene in that as well, when the Doctor hears the knock on the door and again finds himself visited by his own future self, who's playing with a bit of folded paper, and then more and more different versions turn up, and without giving it away, yeah. It turns into a little bit of an interesting story with a good ending once again. I'm trying not to ruin all the stories.
No, it's a good one. It's, what is it, only 3 pages, I think, or 2.5 pages?
Yeah, about 3 pages. And again, it's another one, as you're reading it, it could be in The Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, any of those sort of anthology shows, even sort of TV special, if not a full movie out of it, because again, there's a lot in there. And like I say, I really like how, like, the mise-en-scene, again, I picked up on it in this one. That's why I need to go back and do Chronocops again, because there was too much in that one. But just how they set it, how the house is set up, and just all those little things in the background and everything. And the nice bit at the end where he's just staring into his drink. I'll let that. But I really like that part. And then something else happens, but I won't ruin the story.
Yeah, I know that they're great, aren't they? There's some amazing bits and pieces in these stories. Okay, we've got, there's an Alan Davis story in here, the Hyper-Historical Headbang, which feels a little bit like a Douglas Adams story. Well, it's just a reporter on one of the sort of the loudest rock band in the history of the universe. It feels a little bit like that episode from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where I can't remember the name of the band in Hitchhiker's Guide. Listeners are probably shouting at me at the moment. But so there's an Alan Davis story, which is lovely.
That's good. No, I totally missed that one, so I need to get back on that. Because there are some I read, like I say, there's so many in there. I was just sort of making notes as I went through and the ones that stuck out. And I probably did miss a couple here and there because there's so many in there.
Yes.
And Also, I didn't want to, I was enjoying it so much, I didn't want to then just sort of burn through it and then not have any more to read. So, which is, again, a tribute to all those involved in it, because they are the sort of stories you can, even though, yeah, there are some twists and turning endings, there are some, once you know the ending sometimes and go back and read it, I think you'll find a lot more in the story once you know what to look out for as well. And I like that about this. It's not one of those, oh, I've done it now, I know what the ending is, I don't need to look at that anymore. Especially Chrono Cops, there's so much in there, and as well as some of the other stories that, yeah, definitely needs to be sort of revisited on a regular basis, I think.
It's an amazing collection, really. There is plenty of stuff in here. Just about, I think, every short story that Alan Moore did for 2000 AD, apart from, I think he did a couple of Rojor stories, which are not in here. But it's amazing. There's plenty of stuff to keep you entertained. And along the way, we've mentioned there's Dave Gibbons, there's Alan Davis, there's some Eric Bradbury in there, some Jesus Redondo, Paul Neary, Brian Talbot, lots of great names. Gary Leach, Brendan McCarthy, Ian Gibson, they're all here. So plenty of good artists.
Yeah, and all of them went to, and so many of them went on to like other things as well. Who was it? Was it Higgins? No, who was going to end up being head of Marvel UK at one point? Was that Higgins? Oh, no, Neary, sorry, Paul Neary. Yeah,
sounds right, yes.
Yeah, he went on to, yeah, long, you know, inked for ages, and he, at one point he was like Marvel UK editor, and, you know, all these people that just sort of, I don't know, I just picture them in the staff room at a weird lunchtime, just sort of just sat around telling jokes. And then they, within a few years, they were all sort of spearheading sort of a comic revolution or sequential art revolution, however you want to word it. And they were probably sat next to each other in the staff room eating their sandwiches.
Yes. Seeing what Alan Moore's brought in with his latest script, or sent him with his latest script, or as we know from the Future Shock documentary, Dave Gibbons looking over the shoulder of Mick McMahon and the pair of them having a go at each other about their artwork.
I mean, yeah, it must have been such a... It reminds me a bit like when you hear all the stories of like the Marvel bullpen back in the day when everyone was just sat there and Kirby would be doing layouts, Stanley would just be writing over everything Kirby's drawn, and Ditko there, and just all these different things going on. It's just like a, such a hive of creativity, really. And I think that might be lost a bit today, because where it's... We've got all these wonderful technological things now where people just do it at home and send it in and stuff. I think maybe we may have lost that a little bit now.
Yes, who knows? I mean, as you say, it's an amazingly creative period in 2000 AD's history, and so many of those names, as you say, would then go on to form the British invasion in American comics, and look what they did there. Unfortunately, we couldn't keep Alan Moore in 2000 AD. He was destined for America, and well, as we say, bigger and sort of brighter and glossier.
But not cinema.
No. No, don't mention the films to him at all.
Don't mention the films to him, no. Not if you want to keep your life. But no, it was just, yeah, it was a great era in that. But what I want to know is, how did these stand alongside what else was going on in 2000 AD at the time? Because obviously not... This is my way in. I'm just sort of thinking, what else was going on at this point? Was it like a reflective fling across 2000 AD, or was it against the tide of what they were doing? Or, you know, how did they stand alongside what else was going on in at that time with 2000 AD?
Well, I think, you know, you've got the same creators working on other projects at around this time in the early 80s. So, you know, Alan Moore would be doing Skiz, I think, was 1983, and of course in 1984 he does Halo Jones. Ian Gibson would have been working probably on Robo Hunter. They were all doing bits and pieces, I should imagine, at the same time. I'm trying to think what else was running in those particular years. You know, great stories, lots of dread epics going on.
That was like a boom all the way across 2000 AD. Then it was sort of everything was firing full cylinders at sort of that time.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, it was, you know, golden age, and you get these little sort of short story fillers, but they're by people like Alan Moore and Ian Gibson and Dave Gibbons, Paul Neary. It's amazing.
No, it definitely is, and I definitely want to go back and check it all out, and as I say, and I will do, and I'll let you know how I get on, but hopefully it's led me a bit more into 2000 AD now, because it's always been that sort of little sort of hallowed turf a bit further away that I couldn't quite get to. But hopefully we're getting closer at least.
Okay. So where might you go after this collection in 2000 AD in your exploration?
Well, I might go in, I've already made note of Skiers and Halo Jones. Obviously, I followed the Moore part in. I actually purchased the other day, I've got the two, volume one and two of the Judge Dredd case files, because apparently that's in chronological order, and apparently I was told that will help me make sense of it more.
Yep, absolutely, yes.
And I really liked your last podcast, I've been listening to them to try and help me. Was it the Button Man?
Button Man, one? Yes, one of the best
really
things.
I really like the sound of that.
Yeah.
So I think that will be next. Next payday, Button Man might be hitting on the list as well, see if I can get that somewhere.
Excellent. It's a fantastic collection. Okay, so out of this collection of Alan Moore's stories, do you have one particular favourite that you can pick out that you would really like to recommend or take away?
I would probably say I would have a tie. I'd have Chronocops, which you talked about, and The Regrettable Rose of Rocket Red Glare as well. But I just like the whole deconstruction and that. And the ending would just made me laugh because it was just stupid, but it made total sense. But I'll let people read that bit. Yeah. That was probably my two favourites, because I think the Rocket Red Glare one is pretty much the sort of comics I used to. I remember the Dan Dares and the Flash Gordons and all that sort of stuff. And also the Chronocops, just because I think there's so much in it that I still need to read it again.
Yes, as I say, it's this collection's almost worth admission just for Chronocrops, Rocket Red Glare, and The Reversible Man, which manages to be incredibly touching, just in a depiction of an ordinary life told backwards, which is quite remarkable. And are you into original comic book art? Is that something that interests you at all?
I do like the art side of it, but whenever I see something I like, it's always a little bit more out of my price range.
Well, let's play the fantasy game. If money was no object and you could have one of these stories complete just for the artwork, which one would you pick then?
I think I'd lean towards Rocket Red Glare just for my, because I loved all the whole, it was almost a bit Steve Ditko in its own way, but how they did it, and they tried to make it look like that sort of classic sort of Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, Dan Dare kind of look to it, and I would go that one.
Okay, I'm going to pick The Reversible Man. So we've both picked Mike White stories, so we've gone away from the mega bucks of Dave Gibbons. We might be slightly more affordable for the imaginary budget, but there you go.
That's good to know, then.
So, the complete Alan Moore Future Shocks, you can still find it in paperback on the Amazon Marketplace, or you can get it digitally, the entire collection, for £9.99 from the 2000 AD online store or through their apps for Apple, Android and Windows devices. I've got an old Titan collection of some of the stories, and then I've got the complete collection digitally. Were you reading it digitally?
Yeah, I've got it. I downloaded it digitally.
Yeah,
I've got it off of that. And it was a good site. And again, it by looking at that, you can see all the other stuff they're doing. So as someone who was trying to get into 2080, just having the look around, and you get the recommendations of if you like that, you'll like this type of thing. And I found the actual 2080 app very useful.
Yes, it is. It's lovely that you can actually jump around and see what's available. Great stuff. Okay, Brett, this is the part of the podcast where I ask my guests about their own projects. So it's time for you to tell us about your website, about Cult Faction.
Okay, thank you. Cultfaction.com, it's a website dedicated to sort of cult television, films, cartoons, comics, and even a bit of video games. And we do a bit of the sort of news side of it, but we like to concentrate more on just digging out old shows, old films, old cartoons, things you saw, and just sort of pulling them apart, really, and sort of bringing them back to attention to that, people may have forgotten them, or they may have faded into the past or into the back of your memory, and just digging them all out again and then making everyone feel old, I think.
Right, yeah, of course.
Or just like, what? That was that? When did that happen?
How long ago was that? Yes.
Yeah. And there's been shows on there that I've missed the first time around that I've found out about, and, you know, or films, or in some of them are horrible films, but they're worth watching because they're so bad, they're good, you know? And so, yeah, if anyone wants to check it out, or if anyone's got any recommendations, it's cultfaction.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and Google Plus, and whatever else is out there as well. If you type in Cult Faction, I'm sure it'll show up. But one story that came out today, I was just going to say, did you see what Rebellion did today, Eamon?
Yes, as we record today, they've just purchased or just acquired the rights to a massive amount of British comics from the 1970s that were owned by IPC, I believe. So there's all sorts of interesting characters and stories that Rebellion have suddenly acquired the rights to. Who knows what reprint collections we may see from that, Brett?
I know, there's so much stuff there. I mean, Roy the Rovers is probably the big one, but there's a lot more in there, and again, a lot more obscure ones, so I might have to sort of have a dig down through their archives and dig out of, see what I can find that may have been forgotten, and maybe do some stuff for that on Cult Faction as well.
Yeah, look out for that on Cult Faction to find what might be the hidden gems in the collection that Rebellion have just got their hands on. Yeah, hopefully some interesting trade paperbacks coming out in the future.
It's there for them to use now. Hopefully they'll do a lot with it.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to cultfaction.com in the show notes for this episode.
Very much.
So that will wrap us up. Thank you very much for listening to Mega City Book Club. Do get in touch if you'd like to join me to talk about any 2000 AD book. You can find us on social media, just like Cult Faction. We're on Facebook and Twitter, or you can email me at mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find all these links at megacitybookclub.com. As ever, thanks to Brian from the British Invaders Science Fiction Podcast for hosting Mega City Book Club, and to the artist RoboDub from the freemusicarchive.org for the intro music, which is Circuit Breaker. And finally, again, thanks to Brett for being a sort of 2000 AD novice and being brave enough to come into the book club and bring a sort of splendid collection of Alan Moore's stories before he became almost too big and famous for Northampton to contain.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. And yeah, do check out cultfaction.com. So until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we'll be passing judgment on another fine 2000 AD book, it's goodbye from me and...
It's goodbye from him.
Thanks very much. Goodbye.